Gentlemen, boys, and girls, welcome to another edition of the Experience Hockey Talk, serious hockey talk for serious hockey fans. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take the words hockey kind of out of that tagline, and we're going to have serious talk here today, as everyone knows about what's going on in the country. The death of George Floyd has created an uprising in the country, and you know, rightfully so, as everyone may have read my blog previous Sunday, where I talked about it and about experience I've had and how, you know, I have friends who go through this all the time. And to actually have a conversation with us, share some stories, and help educate us on this, I would like to welcome from the Metropolitan Riveters, Miss Soraya Tinker. Soraya, welcome to the show. Thanks for doing this. And how are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me. I'm doing all right, a little emotionally drained, but I mean, I think that it's been important that I have used my platform in the way that I have to educate others. So as tired as I am, I'm still diving into my self-care, but also being an available resource to educate others.
And you and I, we were talking before the recording, and I mentioned how, you know, watching that video of George Floyd and, you know, seeing him go lifeless was just very, you know, disturbing, you know, and it you know, watching it made me see, like, my friends, CJ, Kareem, you know, even my teammates, Sheik and Claude, and it, you know, even my friend Mansa, who passed away a few years ago. It makes me see them and that and George, and it's upsetting, because, you know, especially for guys like CJ and Kareem, and Sheik, I've been friends with those guys for like over a decade.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you know, I have this platform with TXHT, and I felt like it was important to bring someone like you on and, you know, talk about it, and, you know, obviously for you to share your experiences, because your experiences is, you know, very valuable for helping educate us.
Yeah.
On everything, especially the fact that this is something that you experience every day. You know, yeah. I don't. I may get a few sly remarks here or there because my family is Jewish, but, you know, never to a level that probably what you experience on a daily basis. So.
Yeah, I think that it's so disheartening, and it really just hits home and hits your heart, because these are my dad, my brothers that I worry about stepping out in the street. And I think that it's so ingrained in American society, the traumas and the racial injustices that Black people face every day. And I think it's so important to educate ourselves on the history, the proper history, that hasn't necessarily been taught, and just to understand and recognize where changes need to be made and where we can improve as a hockey community specifically.
Yeah. Now, both being hockey players, I can say that, you know, for my 12 years of playing ice hockey, I've always had female teammates. Mm. So that was always a normal thing for me, but I never had any Black teammates before.
Yeah.
So I don't know what a locker room would be like with a Black player in the locker room. So why don't you tell us what it's always been like for you in that regards? Because obviously, as we've also have seen with Akeem Olu and Evander Kane, you know, they've been very vocal about this. You know, what's it been like for you as a hockey player for like that, like in locker rooms and stuff like that?
Yeah, so I've definitely had the certain situations that stick out mostly that are the main incidences in my head. But I would say growing up, I always found that I wasn't as connected with my team as I wanted to be, just because I was the only Black player on all my teams. So I think that with that comes microaggressions and covert racism. So my teammates saying things that they don't necessarily realize are offensive and are examples of racism. So I think that it's just been a disconnect between me and my teammates and them understanding where I come from and my culture and what triggers me in terms of the racist things that they may say, whether that's blatantly being called the N-word or even I'll use the example of my teammates cornrowing their hair and calling themselves ratchet and ghetto. Obviously those are two extreme situations, but I think that the microaggressions are really what occurs in the hockey community, just because people don't realize how they're affecting us because there aren't many of us.
When you talk about microtransgressions, do you have any like stories in particular of certain occurrences of when those microtransgressions occurred?
Yeah, I think it's just examples. I mean, it's like, oh wow, like you play hockey. I wouldn't guess that you play hockey. Wow, like do you even play? I've been asked like, oh, like do you get much playing time? People assume that I'm not as good as my credentials would say, which is so disheartening. Also just like, I mean this in just terms of being a Black woman, like, oh, like, can I touch your hair? Like little things like that, I think are things that people don't necessarily realize and recognize are examples of racism. But they have learned that from their history and what they've been taught. So it's even more important that they dive into the way that they've been educated on racism and the way that racial practices have affected them and how they can help and instead of hurt.
Right. And you know, and I think the last time I saw that there's currently 43 players in the NHL who are Black.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the NWHL has always had some Black players in the league. Blake Bolden is one name that comes to mind. I believe Jordan Smelker comes to mind as well.
Yeah.
For you being a Black female player in the NWHL, what are some of the biggest things that you're really hoping to do to help educate not just your teammates but the fan base alone of hockey?
Yeah, I think in terms of my team, in the past, I would say that I've been more timid in terms of speaking up and calling people out, but I think that the way I've used my platform so far has allowed me to show that I am educated on the subject matter and that I'm not afraid to call people out. So I think that if these things continue and these comments continue, obviously it'll be my first season with the Riveters, but I have no problem calling people out. I also have no problem answering questions. And then also just talking to people about our diversity and inclusion training, just because I think that's part of team building. And I think that'll be very important. And again, I'm more than welcome to being a voice in the NW, being one of the only Black women.
Yeah. Trying to think of questions. It's, you know, we were talking about this. It's like, I'm trying, you know, it's a difficult topic to talk about.
Yeah. And that's what I've really noticed, that just having one Black parent and one white. And I think that's another reason why I've opened up my platform to educating others, because I know my white family members have called me and had questions. And although it is frustrating and it's not up to me to educate them, I'm still taking the time to do so, because those are important people to me. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think that's also why I'm having so much difficulty too, is because of how uncomfortable the subject topic is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like we've talked about before we started recording, is that you got to get uncomfortable.
Yep.
And have those type of conversations. And I'm just trying to think, and, you know, I'm trying to, like, not stall. you know, I'm trying not to stall because I guess the next thing on top of my hand, you know, to end maybe the hockey conversation for now, to shift into it, is like, do you have any specific hockey stories you want to share, and how, you know, what occurred, how was it handled, and, you know, what was the learning experience from that? I guess that's really the next question I can ask at this time when it comes to hockey, at least.
Yeah. So again, there's always like microaggressions that are spoken about and told to me throughout my career. But one instance, I was probably around 13 or so. I was in the dressing room. My teammates and I were all making jokes. I decided to, you know, like join in on the fun, make a joke. And one of my teammates said, "Shut up, you stupid," and proceeded to say the N-word. Which was very weird for me at that time, just because I was so young and didn't necessarily know how to handle it. And from the way that this was handled is the way that many things in my career have been handled. I feel like I've gone to many of my coaches and told them about the racist comments people have made towards me. And it's always been, oh, like, don't let it affect how you play. Like, you know, like, just go out there and play your game. Like, they don't control you. Like, show them that they're wrong. And have never been open to having those conversations with my teammates up until the past year of my career at Yale. And then again, I used the example of my team cornrowing their hair. So we were actually on the bus ride to Princeton, and I got off the bus and a few of my teammates had cornrowed their hair and proceeded to call themselves ratchet and ghetto, which is not okay, and it's another form of cultural appropriation. So I think that's just, it was really disappointing. And again, addressing that with my coach and him telling me, him not even realizing that it's a problem, one, and two, him telling me to brush it off and not let it affect the way I play. And I don't think that's the way we should go about it in the hockey community. I encourage people to get uncomfortable and recognize where they've come from, recognize the things that they've said, and own up to it.
Yeah, and I think there's always a little bit too much of the suck it up,
yeah,
mentality, because we've always seen how men are just told to suck it up,
mm-hmm,
and just take it like a man.
Yeah, you know,
we've heard that several times before. Do not express your feelings about things. I've been told that one several times by my father. I'm a very expressive person. It's why I do the podcast and the stuff that I do. But, you know, let's transition a little bit away from hockey for a bit, because it's not just hockey,
yeah,
that this affects. It affects what is going on in this country. It is literally like, what is it, like 400 plus years in this, yeah, country alone, of makes just sense, like from slavery and, you know, the way Black people have been treated in this country. I was actually watching A Time to Kill and the movie, yep, Glory last night, both great movies. For those who don't know, Glory is about the Massachusetts 54th, which is an all-Black regiment minus the officers, because during the, mm-hmm, Civil War, Blacks were not allowed to hold ranks officially. It stars Morgan Freeman, Denzel Washington, Matthew Broderick, and Cary Elwes. It's a very powerful movie, because it explains about, it actually shows what the Black regiment had to go through for training and to be able just to fight, because they were never allowed to fight.
Yeah.
In the Civil War, it took excruciating circumstances for that to be allowed to happen. And then A Time to Kill is obviously a movie starring Samuel L. Jackson and Matthew McConaughey, where it's about Samuel L. Jackson's daughter being raped and, you know, almost, yeah, murdered by two hillbillies, I'm calling them hillbillies because that's what they were. And hey, it's true. Watch the movie. It's based in Mississippi. But then Matthew McConaughey's character is the lawyer that has to defend Samuel Jackson's character and into an all-white jury. And to a white judge, a very, you know, racist, you know, judge, and you have racists on the jury. And it took a very circumstantial story where McConaughey's character had to tell the story about the daughter's rape.
Yeah.
And was like, you know, this is what happened. They urinated on her. They tried to lynch her, but the tree branch broke. So they drove and they threw her down a 30-foot hill, you know, and then he ended it by going, now imagine that she's white.
Yeah.
And I think that right there is something that needs to register. It's like, for those who just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know, would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, and I think that goes right back to the difference between all lives matter versus Black lives matter. So saying like, what if they were white? Like if all lives mattered, Black people wouldn't be being murdered in the way that they are because we would all care equally for each other, but that's not the case. And yes, all lives matter, but Black lives matter are the, we're the ones that matter currently because we're the ones being killed. I would encourage people to watch the movie 13th as well. And I think that really is a major educational tool for people because that movie explains why it is systemically ingrained in American society and how the word mass incarceration and the American incarceration system has basically used that as another form of slavery.
Yeah. And I'm actually looking for, oh, I just found it. Warner Brothers just this week made the movie Just Mercy starring Jamie Foxx and Michael B. Jordan free to rent for the month of June. And it's a movie about systematic racism in the judicial system.
Yep.
And so that's actually something, I just put that on my wish list or my watch list last night to watch. I remember when I posted my thing about Black Lives Matter, because we can't be silent about this.
Yeah.
Somebody posted on our Facebook page going, all lives matter. That's what needs to be said, not this. And I go, all lives ain't gonna matter until Black Lives Matter too.
Exactly.
Because, and I think that's the biggest conversation piece out of all this. I've seen people, social media is such a toxic place.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree with that. But also, but we also use it as a way to, you know, try to spread a positive message.
Yeah.
It's just that we can't help that there are people who like the troll or who just are so ingrained in this mentality. When you look at it at the national level, take away the all lives people, because that's an easy conversation that we can have. Because it really is an easy conversation because we just explained it. You know, all lives do matter, but until Black lives matter, not all lives actually matter.
Yeah.
How do you feel about when people come out and do the Blue Lives Matter stuff?
Honestly, I have not paid any attention to it just because, in terms of me and my own self-care, I think I've been able to stray away from the negativity and the negative comments that may have been put out to me. I just choose not to pay attention to them because I stand up for what I believe in, and I'm really not worried about their opinion, because to me, their opinion right now doesn't matter until Black Lives Matter. So
I love that statement, actually, or that response. That's great. I love it. And the reason I bring it up is because it's like, everyone's like, I mean, we all just saw recently in Buffalo.
Yeah.
The 75-year-old senior citizen who got pushed over by two Buffalo cops, and how the entire team resigned from the emergency response team.
Yeah.
And we just saw, what was it, this morning or yesterday? When, I think it might have been this morning, because it's Sunday, June 7th that we're recording. And you had all those cops just standing outside the courtroom after they got arraigned and applauding them.
Yeah.
Like, how, I can't even put into words how disappointing that is.
Yeah.
Because they're essentially applauding two guys who assaulted a senior citizen. Like, yep. this isn't even a black, it wasn't even a black guy, it was a white guy that they did this to, and they're applauding it.
Mm-hmm.
So, what lessons can be taught out of that? it's really hard, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, America is messed up. Like, I am at a loss for words most of the time that I see these videos. It's honestly heartbreaking, and it needs policy change. It needs like government change. Like, so many things need to happen.
I wish people could see video, because my eyes just like widened up going, yeah.
I wish people could see my attitude right now too.
Yeah. Sorry, we're doing audio only. Sorry.
But yeah, it's so frustrating and it's disgusting.
When you look at what's going on, and I live right outside Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and I remember Monday watching live on television all these peaceful protesters getting tear gassed, shot with rubber bullets, just that way the president could take a photo op at a church.
Yeah.
When you see peaceful protesters having that happen to them, you see these fences, these walls being erected around the White House,
mm-hmm.
and around Lafayette Square, and so that way the president can't see it. That's the reason why it's being built, so he can't see it.
Mm.
How, I'm trying to think about the right words to say to describe this, but the only thing I can come to mind is how tone deaf.
Yeah.
Not just the president, but members of Congress to this. Because this is happening essentially right in my backyard, which is, you know, the home of the country, you know.
Yeah.
When it comes to that type of stuff, what are you thinking?
I just see it as incredibly frustrating that people still lack the understanding of what we have been trying to do for years now. We have tried silently protesting, we have tried peacefully protesting, and this is what it's resulted in. And still people are on the opposite side and not understanding what they need to do in order to change.
You know, when it comes to certain people though,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's not that they don't understand. It's more of a matter they just don't care.
Yes, it's ignorance and lack of concern and care, because it doesn't affect them, which is white privilege.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't know how to piggyback off that comment, because you just nailed it right on the freaking head on that one. It's not just white privilege; it's also rich privilege.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know,
that's a whole other topic as well, though, the economic struggles, like the education system, all of that stuff. All of this has amounted to how Black people are marginalized in today's communities.
Now, we talked about like your hockey stories.
Mm.
What are some stories that you can share with us, like outside of hockey, that you've experienced? Maybe not just you, but maybe your family as a whole,
mm-hmm.
have experienced going through this type of racism and stuff like that. Like, what type of stories can you share, and like, what type of lessons can be taught out of this?
I know, like, there's been times my dad gets pulled over, or has been pulled over multiple times, for no reason. Also, there's been times where we've been pulled over as a family in the car, and my mom hasn't liked the way the officers have spoken to my dad, and my mom wants to speak up, but my dad's like, no, like, just be calm about it, because that's my dad's way of handling it. And anybody who knows my dad, he's like super goofy and like talks to everybody, says hello to everybody he passes on the street. And it's things simple as people not wanting to help him in the store. And my dad's been called like racial slurs all the time. It's just things like that that have gone on throughout his whole life. And as a family lately, I think it's been a little challenging, just because my mom has sat down at the table with us and watched these videos and cried. And my dad's like, yes, like, this is what's happened for years. And my mom's asked like, well, why didn't you share more with me? And my dad's like, well, I mean, we've been waiting for change, so I don't see how sharing this with you would promote change. And for me, it's just been difficult seeing my parents go through that as a multiracial couple. But yeah, there's situations day in and day out that happen. But yeah.
Now that's very interesting, that thing that you just said there about your parents.
Yeah.
And how your mom asked your father, why haven't you ever brought this up to me, or something like that. Like, for people who are in interracial relationships, like JT Brown,
yeah,
and his wife Lexi, obviously we know how vocal Lexi has been about everything on Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, maybe having that conversation in the beginning would probably be a good thing to have, instead of just waiting for something like this to come up?
Yeah, and I think my parents have definitely talked about it in the past, but not to the extent that we've been talking about it lately. So yeah, I definitely think that's important for interracial relationships and couples. I haven't had any experience myself, but yeah.
Well, I ask this because it's like, you know, we're talking about educating ourselves.
Yeah.
And how we can do better, especially for those of us who are white. And, you know, so we can be better allies.
Yeah.
To fight this injustice. And, like, I don't know. I think in just my mind, it would just be something that you that would want to be talked about and go and be like, hey, I just want you to know, if we're out, there's a good chance we're going to get pulled over.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, like, you're black, I'm white, you know, and that type of, it, you know, so that way at least a dialogue is already there. So that when something like that does happen, you at least know, hey, this is what to expect. This is how we should handle it, stuff like that. Because, and it's a shame that those type of conversations need to be had.
It is, yeah.
Because I remember seeing stuff from, like, I'm a huge wrestling fan, so like Xavier Woods and Titus O'Neil, who have both been very vocal. And, you know, hearing them say, you know, my father's having this conversation with me, not just to let me know that I'm different, but so I could stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
That's really powerful to hear, you know, to go, you know, just because he's black, he has to act a certain way just to stay alive. And even then, it's not a guarantee.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's important for people who are in these types of relationships to understand, like, your partner just needs to understand that they will never understand. And be open to learning. And that's where changes can be made in a relationship sense, I think.
Yeah. Now, you're a Canadian.
Yes.
I love Canada, by the way. but what, in your opinion, in your viewpoints, what's the difference between the racism that you faced here in America and the racism you have faced home in Canada? Like, is there a difference between it, or is it very much the same? like, what's that, what are those experiences like for you from being, you know, the type that you've experienced in Canada to the type you faced here in America?
Yeah, I think in the States, it's definitely, they're more blunt about it. It's more overt. You hear things about the KKK. You hear things that are just to the extreme. Whereas in Canada, I feel like we brush our situations under the rug more and are more silent, and also don't necessarily have the same history behind our police, our policing and government based on Blacks. But I think that it happens here too, and it's important for the Canadians to realize that.
Yeah. I obviously, one of the infamous things to happen in the history of Canada is with your Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, where he had the blackface incident, I guess, mm-hmm. for a Halloween thing when he was much younger.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, apparently in Toronto, there was some, I'm going to be blunt when I say this, so sorry, but some complete jackass, full blackface, did the black on his hands at the Toronto protests yesterday. And I even said on Twitter that if I was there, I would have been punching that guy in the face repeatedly. But when you see stuff like that,
yeah,
how does that make you feel to see some, you know, like, I'm taking more of the protester from yesterday,
yeah,
who did it deliberately, compared to Trudeau, who maybe have done it for a costume, which is still equally wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm not justifying what he did. I'm saying it is still wrong, but he, you know, but like the jackass yesterday.
I mean, it's infuriating. And I think in Canada, again, with Trudeau, like previously participating in blackface, I think that conversations need to be had about it. And not many conversations were had about it. And those conversations need to be had in Canada in order for us to change, because people are unaware of the racism and the racial injustices that happen in Canada. So again, just opening up that floor for conversation and the ability to educate others and come together and just change.
And I know Canada has been one of the countries to protest along with all 50 states here in the country. I think it's like for the first time ever, all 50 states have held protests for the same thing.
Which is amazing.
Which is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have it, I think the last time I saw it was like 18 countries holding Black Lives Matter protests, and Canada being one of them. What does that speak to you?
I think it just shows that it's farther realized than we think it is. Like, if other countries are protesting against you and what you've done in your country, it is like, that's when you know it's time for change. And I don't understand how people are still stubborn and still stuck in their ways that they haven't allowed us to do so yet.
Yeah, and when you have China and Iran holding protests, something's up there. And they're the ones that we always ridicule.
If anything, it's amazing, because people are coming together and we're all fighting for the same thing. And I think that's part of the problem. We haven't been united in the past. And we promote the groups being separated. We promote marginalization. And those are the things that result in the need for protests like this.
Now, obviously, with the protests, it has done a lot of good things. It has reopened the case for Breonna Taylor,
mm-hmm.
for her murder that happened earlier this year. It has gotten that one officer who had his knee on the neck of George Floyd, his charges upgraded to second-degree murder. It's gotten the other three officers to be charged with aiding and abetting a murder. We're starting to see some change happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I agree when I was talking to my father about this, the next thing that needs to happen is that the actual convictions need to happen. charging them is not enough. They need to be convicted and not like a slap on the wrist like a Brock Turner.
Yeah.
Which is the complete white privilege case right there. If these guys don't get the convictions they should get, what do you foresee happening if they don't get the convictions they rightfully deserve?
I'm gonna go ahead and say that I'm not even gonna talk on that just because it's gonna happen. Look around, look what's going on. Like, it is going to happen. This is a movement, and it's an uprising. So important. Yes, it is. And I think that honestly, like, it would just be I don't even have words for it if they are not convicted.
and that's the scary reality.
Yeah.
That we have to look at. Because, you know, I saw something that today that the Blasio mayor of New York City is going to defund the NYPD and put the money into education, which, why aren't we putting money into education in the first place? That's beyond me. But yeah. One would think that you want people to be educated. But as a community college dropout talks to a Yale graduate, just throwing that out there. So it's like, is defunding the police going to be enough to send that message? Is, you know, I know in certain police jurisdictions, I think Camden, New Jersey is one of them, where they pretty much got rid of their entire police force and just restarted from scratch and did a whole new thing. And Camden is generally considered a really bad area of New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I would know because I'm originally from Jersey. My dad's from Philly. My mom's from Atlantic City. So we have a little bit of a background in with the state of New Jersey. But just a little bit. But so they did a whole reform. And in the last 5 years, they've really turned things around from how things were, where you had a lot of racial profiling to not as much. I don't know the full story, so I just read articles on it about how they tried to work on the reform.
Yeah.
You know, how, in your opinion, this is the community college dropout asking the Yale graduate. This is the best way to put that. What, in your opinion, is the best way to reform the police system here in this country?
I am going to say that the change needs to come from higher up. I think that a lot of political campaigns in the past have used their platforms to promote law and order, which has resulted in mass incarceration and resulted in resulted in the police being more violent and having SWAT and military and whatever else they need to have at these events that are just very unnecessary. And again, mass incarceration is essentially another word for slavery. And I think the change needs to happen higher up, because those are the people who have control over the policies. Those are the people who have control over the laws. And I think as long as we're continuing to promote the police in the way that we do, it's not going to change.
Yeah. There's always a saying that, like, yeah, I gotta be careful with how I say this. Because I know if certain family members listen to this, they're gonna give me hell for this. There are people who come out and say that they're good cops. And then there are people who say that they're bad cops. But the issue is that the good cops are not reporting on the bad cops. And the reason I say that I might get in trouble for saying this is because my cousin was a cop. before he passed away due to brain cancer. And one of the things I remember being at his funeral, which was a police funeral, was how there's this big brotherhood feel to the police, which is explains what we saw in Buffalo with that team resigning over the two guys being charged and them applauding them as they're leaving the courtroom and stuff like that. It explains that.
Yeah.
You know, there are good cops, but I think they're afraid to speak out against the bad ones and weed out the bad ones. You always say that there's a bad apple. What do you do with a bad apple? You take the bad apple out of the batch so the other apples don't go bad.
Mm.
You know, how does that type of mentality get fit? Like, you keep the brotherhood, but you hold each other more accountable for the racial profiling, the injustice that you do. Like, we're finding out that, like, apparently one of the Ohio National Guardsmen that got sent down to DC is a full-blown Klan member. Yeah. And he got sent back to Ohio.
I don't think it's, you know, as much about, like, the good cop, bad cop stuff. I think that they're part of the system. Whether they are trying to change it or not. My younger brother is actually in the policing program here in Canada as well. So I obviously support my brother, but at the same time, it is how the system has been ingrained in people's heads and how they have control over things like that. So I think as a system, as a whole, it needs to change, whether that is implementing more diversity and inclusion training or cultural competency, things like that need to be implemented into police training.
Yeah. So it's not a secret. I'm a huge nerd. I read comic books, all that stuff. Have you ever heard of the graphic novel Batman Year One?
No.
Okay, so they did Warner Brothers did an animated version of an animated movie out of it. I would actually recommend watching it for this whole purpose of this part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because Batman Year One is about the first year that Jim Gordon is in Gotham and the first year that Bruce Wayne becomes Batman. So it's yearly Year One. And the premise of Gordon's story, as we all know, Jim Gordon's Commissioner Gordon. This is about him when he's still Detective Gordon. And the reason he got transferred to Gotham was because he ratted out a fellow cop and he was being transferred as punishment. And throughout this year, he's dealing with a corrupt police commissioner, a corrupt SWAT team, and a corrupt partner, and Detective Flask. And it's about how, you know, Gordon has to be careful by what he does, because if he takes down another cop, what's going to happen to him again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's very, that was very, and again, this is through a comic book. Comic books have always had a way of being able to tell stories about stuff like what we're going through. I mean, Captain America was created to help fight fascists and Nazis. True. He was. Don't believe me? Go back and look at comic book covers of Captain America punching out Adolf Hitler. That's the whole point of creating Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at Batman Year One, you know, it's a telling story about how police forces actually can work or actually do work. So for anyone who's interested, that it's Batman Year One, you can read the graphic novel or you can watch the animated film. It's like an hour and a half, so it's worth it. But yeah, I just wanted your thoughts on that, because you know, we're talking about how we need to make changes and how we're to make things better. And I'm just.
Yeah. I mean, again, like if that's your way of educating yourself, then so be it. I think that I just ask people to find Well, I've like posted my resources and stuff, and I think that there are so many educational resources out there, and people need to start using them.
Yeah, and actually, a great person to bring up is Stan Lee. Stan Lee has always been a proponent of fighting against bigotry, racism, and unjust stuff. I mean, you see cops using the Punisher logo. That's not what the Punisher logo is meant for. Mm. Punisher is a vigilante who takes justice into his own hands. He even kills dirty cops. And, you know, has educated people or cops within comic books about what the meaning of being the Punisher is.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we need more of that education of going, this is the meaning of what you're doing, and this is why it's wrong.
Yeah.
So, I'm being told by a little birdie that we need to wrap up. So, I wanted to apologize for the awkwardness to this, but I guess that's the appropriate thing for something like this, for this type of conversation.
Yeah, again, I think it's so important that we get uncomfortable and are able to talk about stuff like this. And again, that's why I think I've opened my platform, just because I am open to having uncomfortable conversations.
Yeah, we need to have them. We really do. And I know I'm going to be having more of them.
Yeah.
Because I'm actually bringing one of my podcasts that's been sitting dormant for a while, which is The Experience. I'm going to be bringing my friend Jonathan Young on, who actually helped me compile the majority of the links that you see in the article.
Yeah.
Please visit them and contribute as you can. I know Soroya, you're going to be giving me some links to provide as well, for everyone to help learn and contribute as well. Him and I are going to be having a conversation. Jonathan's a black cosplayer.
Okay.
And a good friend of mine in the wrestling community. And so I'm very appreciative for everything, Jonathan, that you've been doing to help me, especially to coach me up for this interview. no, seriously, I think that's important too. Like, we need to be like kind of coached up a little bit and go,
yeah,
you have these conversations. This is what you should try to talk about. This is maybe how you should try to approach it. And, you know, and just go, and also most importantly, just go with the flow of it.
Yeah.
So him and I will be recording very soon, and I'm going to be reaching out to many of my other friends to bring them on to have them share their stories and try to help do what you're doing, and that's help educate and try to make this a better place for everybody.
Of course. That's the end goal.
Yeah. I'm kind of crying a little bit, so I'm kind of glad there's no video right now, because it's like men aren't supposed to cry.
Oh, no, I have cried so many times in the past week.
Yeah.
I'm aware that my self-care needs to come first, but yeah, these conversations need to be had.
Yeah, and you know, for those saying like, oh, why are you crying? It's like, because it's tough. You know, that watching that video was really tough. And, you know, anybody who knows me knows about my friend Mansa, and when he passed away 2.5 years ago, how much I cried for him. I still cry for him.
Yep.
Because I lost somebody who is very important to me. And I think if more people look out at each other as somebody who's important to each other, I know people come and go in everyone's lives and stuff like that, but if you can treat everyone like they're somebody very special to you,
yeah,
this would definitely be a better place for everybody.
We are all human. We should all be treated as if we're human. So these things are upsetting, and these murders are just so saddening. So
yeah. So with that, Soroya, where can the people find you on the social media? Where can people help contribute and stuff like that?
Yeah, so people can follow me on Twitter. My Instagram and Twitter name are SoroyaTinker71. And then also I am doing a fundraiser right now, and I am accepting Venmo requests, PayPal, e-transfer, whatever you may. And my Venmo name is also SororiTinker71. And again, those donations will be going to platforms that are aiming to end police brutality, that fight against the flaws in the American incarceration system, and also just racism in sport. So if you would like to donate, please hit me up.
Yeah. Normally this is the part where I promote my social media and stuff like that, but I'm not going to. Instead, what I'm going to say is that go to the links that are in this article with that are accompanying this podcast. Go to them, contribute. We're going to have your Venmo and PayPal and stuff like that up, so that way people can send you the donations so you can contribute, send those donations off. And So go to those links. I put a couple Twitch streamers who are doing Twitch streams raising money as well. Soroya, thank you so much for doing this. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. Hopefully we'll be talking about more happier things. We'll be talking about you playing for the Riveters. I'm looking forward to seeing you play. And thank you again for doing this.
Yeah, thank you for letting me hop on.
So with that, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I can't do it the way my friend Ben does it, but in the words of the 16th President of the United States of America, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific non-horrifics. And we'll see you next time on the ice.